From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 29th day of September 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. We'll look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Delphi Climbers facility in Indiana that belongs to the Andersons, and hear all about the agricultural news from our own Director of Ag Programming, Dave Dickey. In the second half hour, Emerson Nafziger, agronomist from the U of I, will be here to talk about compaction and fall tillage. And prior to that, during the closing market report in our first half hour, we'll take up nitrogen and when it should and should not be applied in the state of Illinois and Indiana, for that matter. Fabian Fernandez will join us. It all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Checking in on the numbers as they settle up in Chicago on this Friday afternoon. Futures from the corn pit were 5 cents higher in the December contract at $5. Actually, that settlement price not at $5. It was at $5.05. Let me pull the numbers up directly for you. That number was at $5.05, up five. March at $5.17.25, up 4.75. May at $5.22.25, up four. July corn at $5.25.5, up 4.25. Next year's December at $4.83, up 5.25. December wheat, a penny and a quarter lower at $6.83.5. July soft red at $7.19.5, up 2.75. November beans down 11 cents today, $10.99 the settlement. January at $11.08, down 11.75. The March at $11.15.5, 11.75 lower. July at $11.20.25, down 11.25. November beans 8.75 lower at $10.76.25. October bean meal today at $3.02.50, down a dollar. October bean oil at $44.06, down 50 cents. Mercantile exchange numbers, October feeders $96.22.5, down 92.5. December at $98.57.5, down 72.5. September feeders 52.5 lower at $109.47.5. And the October lean hogs today, $77.17.5 per 100 pounds, down $1.40. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. November crude oil futures $77.90 a barrel, down a dollar, rather up $1.72. Ethanol at $2.06, 3.3 higher. Natural gas at $3.96.5, up a penny and a half. And the heating oil at $2.19.3, up 6.9 for the day. October gold futures at $1,308.50, up $1.90. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 10,857. It's just about unchanged on the day. The U.S. dollar at 78.69 is down 0.32. The CRB index at 285.93 is up 1.58 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like. As presented by the National Weather Service for the afternoon, they say the sky shall be sunny. It'll be 76 degrees outside. Southwest winds around 7 miles an hour. Tonight, partly cloudy skies, a low of 53. Winds out of the northwest at 3 to 6. Tomorrow, mostly sunny skies, a high near 76. North-northwest winds between 9 and 17. They'll gust all the way to 23 miles an hour. Tomorrow night, mostly clear skies, a low of 46. North winds between 3 and 9. Friday, it'll be sunny, a high of 71 degrees, with north-northwest winds between 5 and 9 miles an hour. By the time we get to Friday night, 45 degrees for the low, mostly clear skies. Saturday, sunny, a high near 63. Saturday night, partly cloudy. A low on Saturday evening of just 39 degrees. Sunday, it'll be mostly sunny and 61. Monday, sunny, near 63 for the high. And the lows in that period at 37 and 38 degrees, respectively. A more complete look at the agricultural weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour and we talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, is with us today to take a look at the futures markets. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon on this beautiful afternoon in central Illinois.
It is a gorgeous afternoon. You know what? Yesterday was a bit scary, I think, for a lot of folks across the Midwest and in the commodity markets as they watch corn teeter at the $5 area, hoping that it could hold overnight. It busted like a son of a gun early today, but it managed to finish higher for the day.
Yeah, talk about an interesting roller coaster. You know, the world of behavior economics, I wanted to share with you, my customers were as cool, calm, and collected a group as I've ever seen in my life, with as much gyration in the marketplace as we saw. Of course, another one I wanted to share with you a long time ago, they're no longer in business, which probably says they probably did things wrong, but Continental Grain always talked about every night when they got their bids together, did a ritual of where the highest priced grain is in the world and where the cheapest grain in the world is. And corn in the United States is the cheapest feed grain in the world, and that's based a little bit with of the help with the cheap U.S. dollar. It's profitable to turn corn into ethanol. Crude oil also, you know, rallied today. And with this talk that maybe we have all the bullishness factored into the marketplace, you know, corn did act pretty good in, you know, for this much punishment as it took last night, overnight, and during the early morning trade.
Yeah, given all that, it's still kind of the week will be long, and we have a USDA report due out tomorrow morning.
Yeah, feed grains, and then FC Stone's coming out with their guest estimate on Friday. And the weather forecast is favorable for harvest. Some of the dry areas of the world are also getting rain. I think the interesting point on the corn, too, is the stocks report. Some of the guesses are a little higher than the average trade guest estimate, the early harvest. But the general feeling is did the market, you know, one question that the marketplace is plagued with is $5 corn too high with a 159 to 160 bushel average? And, of course, time will tell what the real crop size is. You know, there was definitely some set pricing of, you know, Dece, Jan, and March corn above the $5 mark. So maybe that's one reason why so many customers are cool, calm, and collected.
They're staying calm and collected. They've made sales. First, you think that's the right thing to do. Many have made sales across the board.
That's right. And, you know, I mentioned this morning on the early show there that, you know, as a from past experience, I always, you know, pick a commodity that I'm the bullish on and which one I'm the most bearish on. And, you know, we do know China has been a very aggressive buyer of soybeans. Beans with the yields that we're hearing, you know, I'd probably choose to be a little bearish on the beans here, you know, at this level and north of towards $11. The other factor is that Informa, in their analysis, feels that there could be over a million acres of less production acreage, harvested acreage in soybeans. The other factor is we talked to some of the think tank people and we asked them about the Chinese demand on beans, and they indicated it's probably half demand and half inventory building. But at the same time, bean harvest is going to go up, and I think conservatively a bushel an acre.
I'll make one more note on the corn, and we'll talk about this
okay.
with Zwicker tomorrow. At this point, at least on the weekly charts, we have posted an outside down week, but of course we've got a lot of week left in the corn market, and we had a good day today on the daily charts. Then we need to move on to the beans. I did get a phone call, and I talked to you about this earlier, from a farmer in the Dwight area. That's north of here, for those who are not familiar with Illinois. And the bean yields in their area are pretty tough. Most of the times we've been talking about 65s and 70s. He gave me some 50s and 35s, and it's a pretty widespread area up there that's been dry. I've talked to them before in the area, and their corn yields suffered, too. They were dry during the summer months.
Yeah, and, you know, I'd love to own 1,000 acres around that Dwight to Gibson City area and not too choosy about which farm I'd pick. But the big factor is that, unfortunately, that's wonderful Illinois farmland, and we know that it was a little dry. They had some trouble getting it planted at the same time it was stayed dry. This is one of the things that, you know, ultimately the crop reporting service will get the crop right. There's tremendous variability, of course, in corn and maybe not as much field to field in soybeans, but we are finding maybe in some isolated cases that the later planted beans in some areas, the yield is off some. But as a rule, this is going to be one for the record books and maybe even a 2 or 3 year record book.
I suppose what we would say about the day is that it was a good thing for corn to close above $5 in the December contract, and we ought to let it go at that. What do you think?
I think so. And at the same time, you know, the world coarse grain production is extremely low. And it does have some outside support by the weakness of the dollar and, of course, the demand from ethanol.
Paul, thank you so much.
Have a profitable day.
Hey, you too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon. If you'd like to hear what Paul had to say again, you can do that on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Or, of course, you can listen to him on what we call our mobile analyst portal. It's just voicemail. We updated it at 10:15 this morning, and it'll be up again at 3:15 this afternoon with just a bit of analysis from Paul and some of either the opening or the closing numbers. That's at our mobile analyst portal. The number is 217-333-3434.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Your Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey, is now here with a look at the day's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, officials at the Petroleum Marketers Association of America today say that even if the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency allows vehicles 2001 and newer to use E15 ethanol, the fuel may still have a difficult time making it to consumers. There are concerns about unresolved liability issues that could make many fuel retailers hesitant to sell E15, concerns about how pumps are labeled, and how to change numerous state-level regulations. PMAA also is concerned about underground storage tanks, saying retailers need EPA to publish a list determining which storage tanks, piping, and dispensers are acceptable for E15. Commissioners at the CFTC say that the U.S. futures regulator could be forced to rein in tough new plans to tighten oversight of the $615 trillion over-the-counter derivatives market if it does not get promised new funding. Bart Childen, a Democratic commissioner, says the agency would be in real trouble if it went 6 months without a boost, and he also says that he worries the CFTC could be in a lurch for the whole year. The CFTC has been counting on a significant boost from its 2010 budget of $169 million to pay for its new responsibilities. China's National Development and Reform Commission today says that its initial 2011 import quotas for cotton and grain will remain unchanged from the levels of the start of the previous year. The import quota for cotton was 894,000 tons, and for corn, 7.2 million tons, while wheat was set at 9.64 million tons. Companies can apply for the quota between October 15th and 30th, and the government will assign the quota to qualified companies by January 1st of 2011. USDA today says that wheat growers enrolled in the ACRE program will receive about $300 million in supports for their 2009 crop. Earlier this year, USDA estimated payments would also include $65 million for corn, $14 million for barley, and $11 million for sunflower seed. USDA says states that meet the trigger for ACRE payments include Kansas, Montana, Oklahoma, Texas, and Washington State. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, both programs you can find on our website and listen to their entirety anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. Well, now up next, you know, it's just too early for farmers to apply nitrogen in most of Illinois. I'll have some of the reasons why with the soil fertility specialist here on campus.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
Harvest in Illinois is moving swiftly, and farmers throughout the state are turning their attention to other fall field activities. Nitrogen application in the form of anhydrous ammonia is one of those activities the University of Illinois recommends not take place until soil temperatures are solidly below 50 degrees at the 4-inch depth. Well, that doesn't happen until about the third week of the month, and using NSERV doesn't really move that date forward very much in Illinois, says University of Illinois Extension soil fertility specialist Fabian Fernandez.
Nitrification, the process of conversion of ammonium to nitrate, takes place until temperatures are well freezing temperatures, 32 degrees Fahrenheit. And so you can apply nitrogen a little bit earlier than the 50 degree with NSERV. However, that doesn't prevent any of bacteria from nitrifying that nitrogen. It will slow it down. And so the longer that you can wait to apply nitrogen, the better it is in terms of protecting that nitrogen from getting nitrified.
Well, the longer a farmer can wait to apply nitrogen this fall, the more likely it will be in place next spring for the next corn crop. As to how much in to put on, well, anywhere in the Midwest, says Fernandez, it's possible to use the in-rate calculator hosted online by Iowa State University.
That's always the question, and we have a wonderful resource for farmers to use. It's a corn nitrogen calculator. It's housed at the Iowa State University website, but all the information that it's in that calculator to help you determine what will be the optimum or economical optimum N rate has been produced here in Illinois. We have divided the state again into the north, central, and southern sections. And for corn on corn or corn on soybeans, and it's a great way to know what would be the nitrogen rate that will be most economical.
Search Google for N-rate calculator. Look for the Iowa State site. It's populated with data from each of the participating land-grant universities. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Learnard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Learnard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids, to farmers throughout East Central Illinois. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Wednesday afternoon. Be sure to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. You can pick up all of our agricultural programming any time of day or night at willag.org. Time to take a look at the agricultural cash grain market. The folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana, should be on the line with us. They were busy this afternoon. Good afternoon to you. Do I have somebody from Climbers with me? Not yet. Well, we'll wait and see whether they show up. In the meantime, I'll remind you that, of course, you can visit our website. You can also, if you miss our programming, pick it up off the phone line at 217-333-3434. We post an update of some of the analysis and either the opening numbers or the closing numbers at 10:15 and 3:15 daily. Coming up later in this program on many of these radio stations, we'll talk with Emerson Nafziger. He's an agronomist here on campus. We're going to talk a little bit about tillage this afternoon and compaction. Of course, many producers recognize that there was a lot of rainfall not only earlier this year as they went to the field to plant, but last fall, we all know that one, and the previous spring, and that left a lot of compaction. Emerson has some ideas about what should be and should not be done in the way of deep tillage and disc and all sorts of kinds of fall tillage this year. So let's take a look now at what's been happening with the Andersons. Good afternoon to you. I think I heard somebody in the background there.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. Who am I talking to?
This is Tara Oliver.
Oh, hi, Tara. It's Todd Gleason. Glad to have you on the line.
Yes.
I hope you got your numbers together. But let's start with what's been happening there. I suspect you were all busy today because you're all on the phone.
it was a busy day with the markets being back up after a few days of downtrending markets. So it was...
Enough that they wanted to make new sales?
Enough
that they wanted to make new sales, and would that be of corn or soybeans?
It's with beans. I think a lot of people are interested in beans because the board is going down, and I think that, and most people think it's not going to really come back up a whole lot. With corn, we did see some selling, but I think a lot of people are pretty bulled up right now, thinking that that could continue to trend higher with the lower yields that we're hearing in the areas.
Yeah, does basis tell you that will be the case or not?
I think it does a little bit. I think basis kind of tells you that the corn supply may be a little bit shorter than it has been in the past years, and then actually what we expected going into harvest.
Do you have a working number for national yield? I suspect maybe not, but you may.
No, tomorrow.
We get an update of quarterly grain stocks tomorrow.
Yep. And I actually don't have a number of yield.
Okay, that's fine. What are numbers that you do have, your bids for the day?
Our bids for the day into Climbers are 475 for September, October, 485 for November, 495 December, 497 January, 499 February, 504 March, 508 April, 511 May, 512 June, 515 July, and 443 for harvest of 11.
Tara, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Tara Oliver is with the Andersons at the Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. I'll be back in just 2 minutes when we'll talk with Drew Lerner about the weather forecast.
It's National Mocha Day. The Mocha's roots is not in espresso-steamed milk and chocolate, but rather a coffee bean with a chocolatey taste native to Ethiopia. It was Marco Polo that introduced the mocha bean to Europe and then the world. It's also St. Michael's Day, patron of grocers and bankers. On this day in agricultural history in 1859, Herman Biggs was born. An American physician, he pioneered the use of bacteriological studies in the field of public health for the prevention and control of contagious diseases. In 1860, Chapman Aaron Harris died. He was a co-founder of the first dental school in the world, the Baltimore College of Dental Surgery. In 1913, Rudolf Diesel died, a German thermal engineer. He invented the internal combustion engine that bears his name. He patented his concept in 1892. 21 years later, he threw himself over the rail of an English Channel steamer in 1913 after having lost control over his invention and after receiving a great deal of criticism in the German engineering journals for his theories. And in 2008, following the bankruptcies of Lehman Brothers and Washington Mutual, the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 777.68 points, the largest single-day point loss in its history. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated is with us to talk about the agricultural weather forecast. It's beautiful weather here in the Midwest. Harvest is moving very swiftly. Will it stay that way?
It will. I don't see much that's going to interfere with things too much in the next week or so. We do have a cool air mass that will be dropping into the region over the weekend, and as it comes in, it will likely set off some showers, primarily in the northern and eastern parts of the region. Now, these are going to be brief showers, mostly showing up in the afternoon and early evening hours and then dissipating. And we're not looking at a lot of moisture here, but maybe up to a quarter of an inch or so will occur from some of these showers. And this will most likely begin on Friday night or Friday afternoon in the Great Lakes region, but Friday night and Saturday across the rest of the eastern belt. We'll look for total coverage here, running around maybe 35%, so not everybody's going to see rain. Certainly if you're up in Michigan, Ohio, or Indiana, you're going to see some showers at one time or another over the course of the weekend, but obviously the amounts are not that great, and we'll probably see field work move along around those showers. Prior to that, there will be a few other spits and spats. A little weak cool front is expected to pass through the region here later tonight and tomorrow that will produce a few showers of even lighter intensity across the Great Lakes region. And that's really it for this first week of the outlook. In the second week, we'll probably have a frontal system show up in the western Corn Belt sometime around midweek next week, and it'll probably have a hard time holding together for the eastern Corn Belt. So we've got a lot of really nice harvest weather ahead of us here.
If you look out west and into the winter wheat growing regions, they're running just a bit behind in on pace, that is, in their seeding progress, overall progress behind last year. They were 33% for the 2011 crop. That's 3 points behind last year, 5 points behind the five-year average. It's not much, but still behind. Will they catch up?
Well, I think they're going to have to wait for some rain. Some of the reason for the delay here is dryness that's actually in the High Plains region from western parts of the Texas Panhandle up through western Kansas into eastern Colorado and southwestern Nebraska. It's not a big critical issue. They do irrigate quite a bit in some of that region. But the areas that they don't are going to have to wait until it rains before they can get out and work some of these fields. It's been probably about 45 days since there's been a halfway decent rain event out there. Now, I know that there was some rain that occurred in southeastern Colorado a little more than a week ago, and that was really helpful in that corner of the state. But that's really not in key wheat country, and we still need to see greater amounts of rainfall in some of these other areas. We'll probably get it eventually, but it's going to be slow in coming, and so we will be maybe drifting a little bit further behind on the planting pace for a while yet.
45 days is a really long time, but I suppose we need a comparison's sake. Is it really long time in that part of the world?
Well, and I probably misstated that. It's been 45 days since there's been healthy rainfall in the region. It hasn't been absolutely dry, but that is not all that unusual for that area in September. They usually do better than this, and they definitely do need some rain. It's not an issue to be ignored, but it's not a crisis either. But if we go on into the first half of October and get no rain, which is a possibility for some locations, then we might be looking at a little bit different scenario. But a lot of the area away from the High Plains region is in good shape. So I don't want to also make the feel out there that we've got a big crisis for our wheat crop. But I think we'll do okay, but we do need to get some better rains in the High Plains.
Thanks much, Drew.
Have a great day.
You too. Drew Lerner with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. This has been the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
This is the Farming World from the Land Grant in Urbana-Champaign News and Information. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. In studio with us today, Emerson Nafziger. He's an agronomist at the U of I. Thanks for being with us. This time of year, usually we're still in the midst of harvest around Champaign County, and in east central Illinois, most of the corn is gone. And I take it you've been in parts of the state and a lot of the corn is gone, and we probably ought to talk about fall tillage at this point.
Well, this is one of those years. We've had a couple of frustrating seasons, I guess, in terms of getting the tillage done we'd like to get done. We got some done in 2 years ago in the fall, but the spring of 99 was wet, and then the fall of 99 was wet, and the spring of 2000 didn't give us a very good chance to get in and do what we like to do. We never get that chance in the spring if we're talking about relieving compaction, because the soils are simply too wet to do that. So this is our big chance, and what's as astonishing as the fact that we're so far along in corn harvest is that we're also getting these fields tilled so quickly. In this area, east central Illinois, it looks like half the corn stalks have been tilled already. And so I guess it brings to mind maybe some thoughts about what we should be doing with tillage, what goal we really have to do this tillage. And I've had inquiries about, should we till soybean stubble this year? We don't normally do that. Should we do that this year? And because of this sort of accumulation of compaction, I guess we'd call it, people are really interested in finding some sort of fix for that. Compaction is a difficult thing in some ways. We can't really see it very well. We kind of have to imagine it. The questions come up, does it hurt our yields? And the answer is always one of those maybe type answers. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. This year, I think it did contribute some to the wet soil, standing water problems that we had earlier in the season. And I do think if we had had a chance to relieve compaction with tillage, say a year ago, we probably would have been a little bit better off this year. It certainly isn't going to fix 12 inches of rainfall on a heavy soil. But this is one of those years when any little bit of air that we could have had in that soil was probably a good thing, and it might have brought our yields up some. So it's definitely something that we want to think about as we go into this fall.
Well, let's go back to the compaction issues that came along with the previous seasons, in particular the wet spring, followed by a very wet fall. Last season, there were a lot of folks that were out at both times when they probably shouldn't have been, but needed to be in order to either put the crop in the ground or take it out. They'll know most likely where those spots are. Do they need to do something this fall? Should they do something this fall about, deep tillage to break that compaction up?
I think the answer is yes in general. And I would consider it both in corn and in soybean stubble if we can do it without endangering keeping the soil in place. And that's always something we need to keep in mind no matter what tillage we're doing. That means on slopes we don't leave it bare and let it wash and let it blow. We need to do what we have to do that. And soybean yields are good, and That means soybean residue is decent quantity this year. People should be spreading it well. And in a soybean stubble field, if we had corn there last year, which in almost every case we did, it certainly has some of the compaction that we produced. One of the differences between now and 30 years ago is that we have equipment that's just substantially heavier than it was at that time. Yes, we have bigger tires, and we might use low pressure to try to relieve compaction, but the axle loads that we're putting out there with tractors and combines today are such that we really can't farm without causing a pretty substantial compaction. The other thing about that compaction is that it's at a deeper depth than it would have been with lighter equipment. And it's not at all uncommon now to have compaction, at least to some extent, we'll have compaction below 12 inches, maybe up to 20 inches deep. And we're clearly not going to go in and figure out what the bottom part of compaction is and go that deep to try to relieve it completely. Tillage is never a complete fix for compaction, but it's what we can do, and it's important to get that done because otherwise, we can't depend on freezing and thawing to relieve compaction. It freezes and thaws at 12 inches deep only a few times, and it's only repeated freezing and thawing that really gives us some compaction relief. So we're dreaming if we think that below 12 inches, let's say 15 inches deep, we're going to get freezing and thawing that relieves compaction that we made with the combine last year. So this is our chance, I think. It's not 100% certain that every field is in really dry shape to be shattered well with compaction, and shatter is the word we use because it's what we ought to be thinking about as we run that piece of tillage equipment to the depth we're running it. Where those points are, it needs to really shatter the soil, and that means the compaction is essentially soil that's had the air compressed out of it, and this is our attempt to get some air back into it and get some pore space back. If that's at 12 to 15 inches deep, we really ought to be considering doing our tillage to that depth. The thing we always need to remember about tillage is you don't relieve tillage below the depth at which your piece of equipment runs. And so, in fact, with driving the tractor out there to do tillage, we're always going to create a little bit more. That's one good reason to wait until it's really in good dry shape before we drive out there to get the tillage done. But we need to always think about that. What's that equipment at the points where it's engaging, and we can get off and go back and look at this, look at the soil that you're pulling up from the depth at which you're running this piece of equipment, see what shape it's in, and we don't have a good measure for this, but compaction is, kind of visible. I mean, soils tend to get a little platy, or you can just see that the clods are difficult or hard. Difficult. Clods are hard to break in your hand, perhaps. The good part of that means it's dry enough to be tilling. But the other thing to remember about compaction and tilling for compaction relief, if the equipment is pulling pretty easy, then we're probably not doing a very good job of relieving compaction. In some cases, that's because at the depth we're trying to do this tillage, it's still wetter than we think it is, and that's something we need to avoid at all, if at all possible, to be tilling when it's too wet.
Well, and that would allow the tool to be pulled more easily because it's wetter, more capable of getting through the soils, right?
That's right. As soil dries out, its soil strength goes up. And so we really need, if you put it down to 12 inches or 14 inches and it's pulling pretty easy, I think we need to go back and see, A, is it dry enough at that depth to get this shatter we talked about? And making this shatter happen is an energy-requiring process.
Yeah, what tool? And more specifically, which tools shouldn't be used?
The number one is to get it to the depth that we want to get it. And I've seen a few cases of heavy offset discs being run. Those are fine at relieving compaction, but as I said, they won't relieve it below the depth that you can run them at. And if you're running those at 8 inches deep, beneath that, it's not that the disc is creating lots of compaction, as people have always said that discs do. The fact is that it's simply not relieving compaction below that depth. And 8 inches in many of these fields, unless you've got lightweight tractors and combines that you're running out there, 8 inches is probably not a very good depth. I think that 12 inches ought to be kind of our default goal. And in some cases, we may need to get below that. There's not a good way to go out with a probe or something and figure out where the compaction is, partly because soils likely have enough moisture at that depth in many fields the probe's going to go in fairly easily, and you're not going to find this hard layer at this time of year in all cases. So most of the time with getting to 12 to 15 inches deep, we're thinking about a ripper shank of some sort. Different points give you lots of different options. Sweep points are very hard to pull, of course, and then they would do more shatter than a straight point would do. And it's always going to be a little bit of a question trying to match our equipment or what equipment we have to the conditions. But this is not one of those years to try to get this primary tillage operation done as quickly and with as little fuel use as possible, because in some cases we just won't be doing the job we want to be doing.
Yeah, so wait it out, let it dry out. It's going to get harder to pull. It's almost counterintuitive, but it'll be harder to pull. You'll be using more fuel. You want to go deeper. And it's just going to be an expensive process. And will it pay off?
Well, the question, will it pay off, is always an interesting one. Tell me what next year will be like, and then I can tell you.
I wouldn't be sitting here if I could do that.
But in general, corn stubble this fall likely has more compaction than bean stubble. That's partly because we planted it early when the soils weren't quite as dry. It's partly because the combine gets heavy faster in corn and is heavy more of the time in corn. And there's something about just the environment under a corn crop that, as all of us know, you know, it tends to look more compacted or feel more compacted when we're done harvesting than soybeans often do. And soybeans dry out better as the leaves drop off, of course, and they've had the chance for the air to dry the soil out. So they usually look in better shape when we're done. What they are at 8 or 10 or 12 inches deep may not be all that different. And so someone asked if we should be thinking about ripping soybean stubble, and I think this would be a year to consider doing that, but I would certainly not want to do it with something that buries some of the residue. Soybean doesn't have enough residue that we can really afford to bury much of it, and we ought to be using the minimum residue disturbance shanks or something equivalent to that, maybe just straight rippers in soybean stubble, so that we're not leaving the surface too disturbed and burying some of the residue.
We'll come back in just a moment. We're talking with Emerson Napsiger. He's an agronomist here at the University of Illinois. He works for U of I Extension, the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. If you'd like to hear what Emerson had to say again, you can always do that on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Look for today's program. It is the 29th of September, and you'll find it in the back half of the Closing Market Report. Back in a couple of minutes.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
The farming world is coming to an end on the first day of October after a six-month run. We thank you for your support, and we look forward to the advancement of our core mission, distributing regionally, nationally, and internationally information and analysis of commodity markets and agricultural weather. When the situation warrants, you can rest assured we'll follow key agricultural topics and stories, and we'll make room for discussions with those that influence the political spectrum of agriculture in the closing market report, which remains in its traditional 206 to 236 time slot. Again, thank you for your support as we wrap up the farming world.
Here's a look at the weather forecast for Urbana-Champaign for tonight. Partly cloudy skies, a low of 53. Tomorrow, a high of 76, mostly sunny. Tomorrow night, mostly clear, a low around 46. And Friday, it'll be sunny with a high of 71 degrees. Friday night, clear, low of 45. Saturday, sunny, a high of 63. Saturday night, partly cloudy, a low of 39 degrees. And Sunday, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 61. The extended forecast says Sunday night will go to a low of 37 with partly cloudy skies. Monday, it'll be a high of 63 and sunny. Monday night, mostly clear, a low of 38. And Tuesday, sunny skies next week and a high near 66 degrees. This is the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. In studio with us today, Emerson Nafziger, agronomist from U of I Extension. We're talking about soil compaction and how that might be relieved. We've talked a lot about what farmers can do with tillage. What can a farmer who is no-till do if they might think they have a compaction problem? Is there anything that would help? With a no-till situation without actually going through and tilling?
Probably not very much. As I said, we can't, when we're no-tilling, leaving all the residue on the surface, we get even less of this sort of freezing and thawing. It tends to, you know, freeze up and thaw out a little bit less when there's a bunch of residue on the surface. One of the options we have, though, with no-till, and people always need to be careful with this, but it is to take these minimum disturbance rippers out, and you can rip a corn or even a soybean stubble field and still have it qualify for no-till as long as you're not burying very much of the residue. Yeah, I would consider that if I had the equipment to do it. It takes a lot of power to do that to a depth, of course. But the minimum residue shanks would be ones that don't leave much of a trail when you use them, and so this would be one option. And no tilling certainly can be done after that, as long as we can maintain residue cover after planting.
In general, do you go on a diagonal or do you go with a rows in this kind of situation? No-till or not, it doesn't matter, I suppose.
Well, and generally, if you're doing this ripping in a no-till, say in corn stalks, you would go straight with the rows. If you go across the rows, you're going to tend to be sort of ripping out root balls, and it's not going to look undisturbed as we'd sort of like it to look when you're done. I guess the other thing we should remember is when we think about the effects of compaction, a lot of our soybean yields are really good this year, and if they were affected by compaction from last year's corn crop, it certainly doesn't show very much. So soybeans are a little bit different in that regard. I'm not saying that we could just forget about compaction if we've had a lot in our corn stalks this fall and are going to go back with soybeans. I think it's still worth considering. And I'm not certainly saying that everybody needs to go out and rip every field. I mean, we've had rippers for a long time now. Typically, we're using those kind of after several years when we feel that, we're getting more standing water or a little less drainage, and we can relieve that for a few years by going and using a ripper. If you're in an area where you don't feel too alarmed by compaction, you know, just because we can this fall doesn't mean that we should go out and do this. It's still an expensive thing to do. And I think we should reserve it for when we really need it. But it's certainly possible this year that more fields need it than have usually needed it.
In this year, and I suppose this might be the right way producers would be thinking about it, would they be spot ripping as opposed to doing whole fields?
There could certainly be some of that. We made a lot of tracks a year ago, as you remember, and people would consider those to be the most compacted parts. And the truth is that if it was standing water when we were, or almost standing water when we harvested last fall, it pushes the soil out, but it actually doesn't compact that soil. Soil that's saturated with water won't compact because there's no air in it, and you can't squash the air out of it. So I think that a lot of people would probably say they never really saw the effects of where they made those ruts last year, this year in the crop, and this is one of the reasons why. As long as you could level it over and get a stand, which we certainly did in our soybeans, it really didn't have that much direct effect. Just as an observation of some of the fields that I've seen that have been tilled, some of them have surprisingly little residue left on the surface. That's partly because we're probably running something like a disc that tends to bury residue. If it's going to any depth, we can hardly not bury residue with an offset disc. The straight discs with rippers can be adjusted, and we can adjust gangs and so on to let enough residue on the surface. But I'm always a little bit alarmed if we're going into the start of October with a lot of the residue already buried in these fields. That's simply, I think it's because the soils are drier than we've had them for a while, and some of these combination disc rippers are pretty aggressive if they're set to do that, and they can bury a fair amount of the residue. We don't want to leave all the residue on the surface, but we also don't want to leave no residue on the surface. I did see a few fields moldboard plowed, so there's still some of that. Probably a little bit the same comments as the disc. If we're plowing to 8 inches deep, that's the only relief of compaction we're going to get. And in some fields, and certainly in some years, that's enough. But turning them over black at this point is something we know we don't need to do. And depending on what we get this winter, it's something that sometimes people come to regret that they didn't have a few corn stalks out there to hold things back a little bit.
Emerson, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Emerson Napsiger is an agronomist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. You've been listening to The Farming World. It's a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason. Have a safe afternoon.